Hello and welcome to Roll Digs, the official Ore Digger Athletic Podcast. My name is Paul Podisco, and thanks for tuning in to our initial trip out of the gates. Again, my name is Paul. I have been lucky enough to be the voice of the Ore Diggers for 28 years and counting. And what I'm looking to do with this podcast is we're obviously going to talk to coaches, we're going to talk to players, we're going to talk X's and O's, but I also want to talk an awful lot about the stuff beyond the plays, beyond the normal stuff, talk about upbringing, talk about dreams and successes and big memories. We're going to talk to current athletes. We're going to talk to all of our coaches. We're going to talk to Matt Steppen, our athletic director, is going to get sick of me because we're going to talk to him a lot. We are also going to talk to alumni. We're going to talk to, you know, some of your favorite Ore Diggers that have gone on in life and been extremely successful. And we're going to hear, what they're doing with their life post Montana Tech Athletics. So I'm really looking forward to a lot of great conversations. And again, I can't thank you enough for joining us here as we get underway. Our first conversation is with Mr. Adam Hyatt. Adam Hyatt, head coach of the Montana Tech men's basketball team. He has been at the helm for 9 years, and the amount of firsts that this man has put together as head coach is pretty astounding. When you look at the amount of wins, you know, right now I want to say, I think he's up over 250 wins without numbers in front of me. I want to say like 254 wins at the time of recording as the head coach of Montana Tech. His Ore Digger basketball teams have won the past three Frontier Conference regular season championships as well as the past three Frontier Conference Tournament Championships, which has never been done, and he certainly would like to keep that trend rolling here. So we'll check in with Coach Adam Hyatt here in a few, and I keep saying we, and what I mean by we, you're going to be stuck with me most every time we're out here, but from there, I also have a lot of friends that I'm going to rope in. You know, I've been lucky enough to have some tremendous people around me for my entire life, making me sound really, really good. Guys like Ron Haskett. You know, next year, Ron Haskett has done football games with me since 2005. So next year will be our 20th season doing football games together, which is just incredible. I remember asking Ron if he wanted to do games with me while we were standing in line at Dairy Queen. That's a true story. We'll talk about that as Haskey will join us a little bit later on. And also John Thatcher. You know, JT has been doing games with me for about the last 13 years. Basically, the week he retired, the last time at Butte High School, I went in and I was like, so you're going to do games with me? And he couldn't come up with a good excuse. So he is, I have been lucky enough to have JT by my side for a lot of years, and look forward to it all the time as well. So I'm going to get those guys in here. We're going to have conversations with a lot of other people that will kind of float through and have a different perspective as well. So again, thanks for joining us. And without further ado, here's head coach Adam Hyatt.
What an honor for me.
this feels so, it feels so normal and something we've done a lot, but it feels so strange too. It's kind of odd. Yeah.
Honestly, it's been a long time.
It has been a long time.
You know, the glory days of overtime,
yep.
You know, in the coach's corner, those were fun days.
Yeah, truly. Yeah. You know, the idea of sitting eating steak fingers at Medals, uh-huh. And, you know, chatting about hoop and everything else, but it's about time. We've got a little bit of little help. Things are quieting down, and it's time for us to sit and chat. And, you know, Coach, I guess to start, thanks for your time. As always, you're a busy man, especially in season, so thanks for that.
Yeah, you bet. You know, we're in the home stretch right now.
That's it.
I can't believe that there's 3 weeks left in the regular season. It's unbelievable how quickly it goes by. I mean, we just remember that we seemed like yesterday we were just starting our team retreat. I mean, we do a team retreat at the beginning of every year, the first weekend of school. And that kind of kicks off our season, and that gets us into our conditioning and all of our stuff. And boy, it just feels like it was yesterday, and here we are, you know, February already.
JT and I always joke that, you know, it's the longest season known to mankind.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it is flat out the longest season known to mankind. Yeah. But, you know, we always joke that once we clear the new year, like, it is a grease slide. Like, we hit January, and then all of a sudden, here we are. It's almost over.
Yeah, that's how it feels like, too. I mean, everything is prepared for that January, yes. Right? Next year, obviously, things are going to change. But mm-hmm. the way the current schedule has been, January kicks off conference, and it's so intense and it's so exhausting that you just pour yourself into it, and it is emotionally draining. Yeah. And then before you know it, you look up and you look at the calendar, it's like, I can't believe this is almost over. It's like, we only have 6 games left. And now, obviously, we got 4 on the road here to end. That's quite the daunting task. It's been a few years since we've had 4 in a row. We used to do this when we had 7 teams in the league, when LC was in the conference, yep. and we were doing this triple round robin. There were several instances throughout the year where you would have 4 straight road games, and you know that became just ordinary. But since LC dropped out, the most anybody's ever played was 3, right? But I'll give a little context as to why. So Sean Hughes, the coach at Montana State Northern, his son is a senior, Matt, at Haver High, mm-hmm. and their senior day is Saturday. And so he was looking at it this summer, and he was scheduled to be down here in Butte, and he's like, how am I supposed to make the senior day, right? And so when he first reached out to me, I said, talk to Haver, get the game changed. Yep. See if you could fix that or do a senior night some other time. And they really wouldn't budge, and so we looked at a couple different variables, and so we really just came down to, all right, can we switch games, you know, because we were supposed to have played Haver here, or Northern here, then at Northern, and then Northern here, but we switched the middle game, and we hosted them twice in a row, and now we're going up there. So that put us in the position to play these 4 in a row, but it's going to end up being fine because we get to stay on the road. We're going to be in Great Falls on Saturday and then work our way up to Haver and, you know, see if we can enjoy the high line in the beautiful month of February.
To see if we can enjoy the high line, the silver lining of sorts. So let's kind of start back here a little ways. This is year 9 for you. You know, I remember, let's go back to the overtime days, obviously, when you came in year 0, mm-hmm. That first year. Talk about that progression. You know, the idea of goals for that year 0, then, you know, the idea of, you know, key recruits, those first couple guys that really changed things for you and you know, kind of got you on the path to where you are right now. Talk about that first year specifically. I mean, how much do you remember that year 0 and how much do you look back on that as opposed to where you are now?
So I remember when the job opened up, and this was the end of February of 2016. Yeah. Okay. And I was noticing on, now obviously I was very interested. Let's see what this is all about. You know, it's a place that I'm familiar with, you know, being in the Frontier, and always liked Butte and always enjoy playing it, you know, in this facility and all that. But I started watching on social media that there were a lot of players that were on that 2015-16 team that were leaving, and they were like announcing on social media, I'm transferring, I'm going in the portal or whatever it was. And I was thinking, boy, what kind of team we're going to have left, right? Yeah. It's like we didn't really know what we were going to have. So anyway, went through the process. And when we accepted the job, we came up here toward the middle end of March, and we did like the introductory press conference and all that stuff. And I remember I was doing a TV interview, and one of the questions was, so what are you going to do with your roster? What do you think about next year's team? And my answer was, I don't even know what team we're going to have. You know, it's like we got to assess what our roster looks like and who's even going to be here, and then what recruits are even available this late.
Yeah.
And so once the dust kind of settled, I literally started that evening. We had a team meeting, and we explained what we were going to do moving forward. We're going to do individual interviews with each player, try to see who was going to stay, who was leaving. We were going to, you know, I had to figure out a coaching staff, mm-hmm. you know, had to, you know, there, I was left with no schedule. We had to build like a schedule. And then we got to fill some holes with recruiting. And so it was a time consuming beginning, but that's how it is with every new job, yeah. You know, especially when you don't really have a roster in place and you're just trying to scramble. And so when the dust settled, you know, we kind of saw who was coming back. We were able to fill some holes late. We picked up a really good in-state kid, Dylan Panabecker. You know, he was still available. We loved his toughness and everything, and we were able to bring him in. But at the end of the day, it's like we just looked at that team and we thought, okay, this is not a championship roster. You know, this is a roster that has a bunch of good kids. We're probably not going to be that great to start. Let's see what we have to work with, and this is going to be year 0. You know, because we were just kind of left with whatever it was, and we were just going to do our best. And honestly, our expectation in the world of athletics, your happiness is predicated on your expectations, right?
Yes.
And so if you have lofty expectations and you fail to reach those, you're miserable. And it's really difficult, right? When you have expectations that are lofty and you reach them, hey, it's joyful, right? You talk about peaks and valleys always, like the highs are high, the lows are lows. So that particular season, our expectations were, I hate to say it, but they were pretty minimal, right? They were kind of low, where we just thought, let's just be competitive and see what we can do. And we knew it was going to be a really, really, really challenging season when the first game of the year, we're hosting Yellowstone Christian College, and we had to hit a corner three at the buzzer to send it to overtime. And I remember talking to our coaches after the game, and I told them, this is going to be a long year. You know, we're not going to win a lot of games, but we're going to do our best to develop these guys, and we're going to at least set a framework for what we can build toward, right? Yeah. We are going to establish a culture of toughness and togetherness, and the guys that can't take it from this year's team, they won't be here next year, and they'll pull their own ripcord, and that's okay.
Yep.
And we're going to focus on recruiting, and then next year will be year one, and we're going to bring in guys that we think are going to fit our culture. And that's really what we did. And so, I remember there were some cherished memories that year. Honestly, we went up to play in Havre, Montana State Northern, and we scored 36 points in the whole game. And we lost something like 62-36, something along those lines.
Yep.
And I remember it was just like a super low point. That was our 9th or 10th game in a row. We had lost. We still hadn't won a conference game. We had a chance to win an early conference game, but a Great Falls hit a buzzer beater desperation three to beat us by 1 point. So just anything that could go wrong went wrong that year.
Yeah.
So then that very next night, we're down in Great Falls, and we're playing at. It was University of Great Falls at the time. And our guys just went out there and competed, and they believed that they could win. And they won the game. And I remember in the locker room, just water throwing everywhere. It was like we just won the conference championship. And it felt that way because we hadn't won any games, right? And then we went on to lose like 8 or 9 more to end the year.
Yeah.
And that was that. But we had a lot of competitive games, and we had a lot of opportunities where we put a scare in the teams, and we're like, okay, all right, we got some nice little young pieces we can work with. So moving forward to that second year, we brought back 5 players. That's it.
Yeah.
And we started over, brought in 11 new players.
So talk about that process of bringing those guys in. You win one conference game. So when you're selling yourself, you're selling the program, you're selling Montana Tech. Is that a hard sell at that point?
It is and it isn't.
Okay
so it was not a hard sell for high school players, right? Especially in-state prospects, because they saw opportunity, right? Where I can go and play right away because they're starting over. Like we made that very clear. This is year one, and we're gonna start playing with young players, and we're gonna go through the fire together, and you're gonna learn and grow. And then over time, you're going to figure out how to win, and we're going to keep adding to our roster, and then we're going to be champions at some point. And that first initial recruiting class bought into it. Taylor England, Darius Collins, Drew Hughes, Christian Jones, that whole crew, right? They were amazing in that first year, right? Even Will Mitty was in that. He graduated a little bit early, but even Will Mitty was part of that. Cody Lyles, I can't remember. I think it was 6 or 7 of those freshmen. And anyway, so they bought into it, and their first year, we were significantly better than the year before. The results didn't always show. I mean, a loss is a loss, but instead of losing by 12, we were losing by 2 or 3,
yeah.
And we were getting close. Now, where we struggled was with the transfers, with out-of-state kids, because transfers, their clock is limited. Right, they're hourglass, right, for basketball life.
It's already drained.
It was halfway drained,
yep.
Right? And so their whole thing was, we felt we could get anybody interested, right, because we have a lot to sell and we can get them up to campus, but we couldn't close because there was always that question of, well, how quickly are we going to be able to win?
Yeah,
right.
Yep.
And so we swung and missed on a number of really quality out of state kids early on in the process. But we got some good ones that were going to at least make us a little bit better. And that was our whole mentality, was if we can just show progress every year and we can make big jumps every year, then pretty soon these recruits that are saying no to us are going to say, they got something going on here,
yeah.
Right? And that happened after our third year, where we went technically a third year, but we called it year two, mm-hmm. but it was technically our third year. But in year two, when we had our first winning record, and we went on the road and won our first conference playoff game, first time in, since the 90s, 1990s.
Yeah.
We felt like that was a momentum changer. That was going to shift the change the culture here and change the perception from the outside. So then that spring, we went out and signed Sindhu Diallo, right? And we got Cody Baumstark. And we started with those two guys, and all of a sudden, like, hey, we landed a high-end guy, yeah. right? And so that really kind of changed our future, you know? And then since then, we've been able to just keep adding good pieces. But it's a process. And the way I described it to all of our early teams was, it's like, this is a startup business, right? And startup business are hard, and most of them fail. Yeah. And they fail because the people on the inside, the early investors, they bail because they feel like it's going nowhere. I'm losing my money. What kind of investment is this? And then they just get out because it's too hard, right?
Yeah.
But I was like, the businesses that make it are the ones, those early investors say, I'm in it for the long haul. We're going to make this happen no matter how hard it is. We may not make money for 3 years, right? But we know that we have a great plan in place and it's going to happen. We have a product to sell, right? And so that's the way we described it to our early teams, and they completely bought in. And over even those years where we were just struggling to gain a footing in the conference, we didn't have very many players leave the program. Like, they stayed year after year, like, we're going to get better. We are buying in. We believe in this, right? And so those early investors were the biggest reason why we are where we are, because they didn't bail on it. They didn't pull their money out. They were stakeholders and shareholders,
yeah.
and they really went out to recruit other investors and said, come be part of this. This is going to be something great, right? We saw this vision. It's kind of hard to, like, realize it throughout the process, but you know, we were able to just stay the course, you know, and so we knew at some point we would break through. We were, you know, we thought that it would be the COVID year, but the COVID year was just a mentally destructive year.
Yeah.
It was a hard season.
So many ways.
So it kind of delayed us by one season, but it's been a fun ride.
You know, you look at that first group, like you say, that, I mean, your basement layer, I mean, your absolute foundation, mm-hmm. those guys. So much was built on the work that they put in over those first few years.
100%. I mean, you know what's crazy is, you know, we look at our list of alumni, right? And from when we started, like you said, we're in year nine, from when we started to where we are, and the list is not very big. And it's not very big because they all stayed here for 5 years, yeah. right? And so, like, really, we're just cycling out our second wave of recruits, you know, with Keeley Bake and you know, Cam Lawrence is coming back next year, but you know, Afani and Mike, these guys, they were kind of our second wave of guys. And so, like, that is what a healthy program looks like.
Yeah.
Right. Where you're able to just have great roster continuity and retention every year. And it's not easy to do, you know, and we joke about it all the time. We say, we just can't get rid of anybody, you know, because there's a lot of players that we would love to add, but we just don't have the roster spot. But in actuality, like, we understand that is the strength of our program.
It's not the roster spot anymore. It's the floor space. There's only so many spots that you can put chairs on that side of the floor. I mean, unless we decide to cut into the stands or something over there, especially during COVID when we were all staggered and that made life a little difficult. Yeah.
Well, because our staff has grown quite a bit too. So we got like six or seven in polos, and then we have all the rest down there. So it is a long bench. It's funny when we go back and look at film and we just see that entire sideline is just filled with, you know, with our program. It's kind of fun. But
I always laugh when I look over and you've got guys standing and then the different colored chairs because we've run out of the wood, you know, anyway. Yep. But I really want to talk about that progression from when you're scrambling for pieces, like when it's one of those where you're like, this young man is going to make us better. Is it going to be significantly better? I don't know, but it is going to make us better. And now you're in a position where, I mean, you're a national power. You have been for 3 years, Frontier Conference champions, Frontier Conference tournament champions, 3 years running. You know that you went from, you know, having teams in your sights in conference to having a huge bullseye on your back every time you get on the floor. Talk about that recruiting shift a little bit, because you go from being kind of an unknown to, I mean, you're probably reaching out, and if people are paying attention to the NAIA level, they certainly know who you are. Talk about how that has changed as far as recruiting.
Yeah, so you went from being on your hands and knees and begging players to come and give you a chance and, you know, and to invest in your program to now you're trying to figure out which ones make the most sense, you know, where it's like we are fortunately able to identify prospects that we feel like are going to elevate our program or are fill the needs that we have. And there's several of them, and it's kind of, it's hard, you know, in a way where like you're kind of saying no when you're passing on certain guys, but there's only so many that you can take and you have to be somewhat selective. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. We've been burned by it a little bit because we are so selective that we are a little bit more patient, you know, with who we offer, who we go after, because we're really trying to figure out, is this really the right fit?
Yeah.
Because now we're at this point where fit is the most important thing. When during the early days, it was get the best players you can get, and then we're going to figure it out. Yeah. It may be super clunky. The pieces may not fit, but, you know, we're going to be able to put a group on the floor, and, like, we'll try to smooth those rough edges, and we'll put up a competitive unit out there. But right now, when you have a lot of really good pieces, you're trying to figure out, okay, what are the high-end guys that you want to add that aren't going to disrupt from what you already have in your program? Or what are the guys that are going to elevate and be connectors with what you have currently in your locker room? So being a little bit patient, even though we might lose somebody, because a lot of players are anxious, like, hey, you know, you better, if you don't offer, I'm going to go to a different, it's okay, you know, because we feel like getting it right is more important than overreacting and panicking and, you know, and just trying to, like, offer somebody just because they're, you know, saying they're going to go somewhere else. That's not as important for us, but it's a very time consuming process, really, you know? So we're kind of in the same situation. It's the world of coaching is so unique because you have one foot in the present and you have one foot in the future always. Yeah, you can't ever have 2 feet in the present, because if you do, then you'll like your team now, but you won't like your team tomorrow, you know, or next season. And so you're constantly evaluating what you currently have, who's coming back. I don't ever lament, oh my gosh, this guy's a senior, we're going to lose him. How are we ever going to replace? It's irrelevant. That's just part of the process. They're going to graduate. I'm going to try to enjoy every last second with those seniors, but knowing that as soon as that last grain of sand falls out of that hourglass, it's over. And now the page has to be turned, and we got to focus on, okay, well, how can we keep this going? So that, to me, is probably the most challenging part of coaching, is at least from my perspective and my experience, it's hard to enjoy what you're doing. You know, it really is. You talk about the things that we've done. I can't even hardly remember what we did last year, you know, because you're so focused on what you're doing now and what you're trying to build for the following year that it's just a blur, you know. And I wish that I had the capacity, and I probably should, because my wife tells me I need to, that I need to just calm down, you know, just take a deep breath, just savor what you're doing a little bit more, or at least when season's over, just reflect on it. But it's so challenging to do. Yeah. And because you're competitive and you just want to try to keep the momentum going, because that's the, you know, momentum is very fickle in athletics. And the second you lose it, it's hard to recapture it.
Yeah. You know, and I can testify to that idea that you're already on to the next year. You know, I remember when we were at Segu, when I was still at radio, and you know, post game at Segu, I come down to shake your hand, give you a hug, and you know, just talk about the season. And you and I started that ball started to roll. You're like, wait until next year. You know, that we've got some pieces. We're ready to roll. The same goes, you know, last year, where, you know, the season ends, unfortunately, here on this floor. And it was that same thing going, you know, wait till you see the pieces we've got in place. And it's interesting how that works, because you have to be, I get sentimental about seniors and about, you know, the graduates moving on, and, you know, obviously graduating from Tech, they're moving on to great things. But yeah, the excitement for next year, in that next season really starts to build quickly.
Yeah. You know, when I was a young coach, I was a miserable coach. You know, I really was. I felt like I was miserable all the time, because I could never enjoy at all anything that we were doing, because I was just so paranoid about the next thing. And, you know, as I've become more experienced over the years, I've really conditioned myself to, if we have a big win, then I'm going to enjoy that win with the guys, and we're going to appreciate what we did for at least a couple hours after that game.
I was just going to ask you, so how long do you normally give yourself? Is it different between a Thursday and a Saturday, I would assume?
That's what makes it beautiful, is that you do have a little bit of time to reflect. So we have a pretty good routine now to where, you know, like we play at 7 o'clock, the game's over at 9, let's say. You know, and if we have a big win, then yeah, I can go and enjoy it. Go talk to my family, don't talk to other people, fans, you know, whatever. And we can enjoy it for a good 90 minutes, you know, 2 hours. And then about 11 o'clock, it's like, all right, okay, we better get to work. And so then, you know, for a couple hours, we kind of get to work on the next day, put our plan together. And then we, you know, try to get some rest. And then we're back up in the morning and the page is already turning. And that's the hardest thing for the players, is because we're trying to get the players, you know, we try to live by this mantra that rent is due at midnight.
Yes.
Right, where it's like enjoy it till midnight, but then as soon as it chimes, the clock yep. chimes at midnight. You know, it's time to yep. turn the page and rent is
the
due.
Shoe falls.
Yes.
So all right. So give us an example of when you were I'm using air quotes. We can't see a miserable coach. What was the time stretch there when you give yourself when you were at West Mini? Talk about that side. You say that. Would you give yourself any time to celebrate wins?
No, it was
because
hard.
You had a lot of wins down yeah. there. I'm not sure if you remember that.
Yeah, I love all those guys I coach, and I stay connected to a lot of them, yeah. you know, and I talked to one of them today. He called me. He's coaching like a 13-year-old team, and he has all these questions, X's and O's. Like, all right, no, 5-out offense, you know, and he just was asking all these. So I love being able to connect. You know, his son is on the team and all that stuff. So anyway, but we would play a Thursday game, right? And let's say that we were playing Western on Thursday, and then we had to play Carroll on Saturday, okay, hypothetically.
Yep.
So we would go perhaps get a big win on Thursday, and I'd go in the locker room, and right away it's like, great job. But if we don't do this better, we're going to get our butt kicked by Carroll, you know, on Saturday. And this is, and like my mind is already turning, and the guys are looking at me like, can we not just enjoy what we just did? We got a big win. These games are hard. And so it was just that I was, and honestly, part of it for me was because I had such an unbelievable mentor, right? Yeah. Tommy Connor is his name. He's an unbelievable coach. He's the best coach I've ever been around. I owe everything in my career to him. I was a Division I assistant coach at University of Idaho, and I remember we were there, and it was after one of the seasons. I was talking to my wife, and I told her, I said, I really feel in my heart of hearts that I cannot become the head coach I want to become unless I go work with Coach Connor, right? And so,
saying something.
So we made that decision that we kind of left the Division I world and we went back to Westminster, and I was his assistant for 3 years, and it was like the world's greatest internship ever, you know, where it's like it was on the job training, but I could just pick his brain, be by his side with everything, all of his thought processes, see how culture is built and yeah. how to get the most out of each player and, you know, all that stuff. And he was so amazing. And then he left, and then I was fortunate enough to be promoted to the head coach at a relatively young age. And I had so much respect and admiration for him. And like, I always viewed that as his program. This is Coach Connor's program, and I'm just the caretaker for it. I don't want this thing to just nosedive, right? And so I wanted it so bad because I just didn't want to let him down when I was a young coach that I was a miserable coach,
yeah.
right?
The amount of pressure you put on yourself, yes. you just keep shoveling it yeah. onto your back.
And there was no pressure at all because you can't, I mean, as a young 31 or 32-year-old coach, like you can't compare yourself to the greatest that's ever yeah. coached there, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and he would always tell me that too, but then as time wore on, you know, and you get more comfortable in your own skin and all that stuff, and then, you know, you're just able to go and do things at your own pace and not worry about trying to, you know, because comparison is the thief of joy. You know, it really is in anything in life, but especially in athletics. So that was primarily what it was all about, where I was just like, we just can't let this thing slide, you know, at all. And even though we had some amazing wins, like I remember we went over and it was December 5th, I believe, 2011. And we go to play at Northern Colorado. Okay. And they're defending Big Sky champs. It's a regular season game. It's a counting game. And, you know, they give us some money. We fly over there and play them. And we just played amazing. Beat them by 15 on their home floor. Right. Wow. Just from start yeah. to finish, start to finish. Like
check bounce.
Yeah, exactly. So, But I remember, like, what an unbelievable game. And, like, we were rah-rah in the locker room. And then it was, like, as soon as I walked out of the locker room, I was already thinking about the next game. And I was just like, how miserable is this? Like, these are things that they just don't happen very often. So then fast forward to a few years ago when we went over to Missoula and we beat the Grizz, right? I made sure that I was going to allow our guys to embrace that moment, yeah, because those are things that are just really hard to do. And I wasn't going to take that from them again, you know? And so it's like, these are just the things that, you know, when you just see things differently. Not that I was any better or worse as a younger coach, like, you know, your knowledge of the game and how all that is probably the same. It's just more of, you know, how you're able to manage your time and how you're able to be in the present more and how you'll be able to build relationships more, you know, and have more meaningful relationships and things like that. Like, that's the stuff that you just, you know, your own kids grow older and you just realize they're almost out of the house. I better take, you know, take advantage of this time that we have with them. And, you know, the same thing goes with all your teams, because especially, like, you get a sense of your own coaching mortality the older you get too, because then it's just the more you realize. I think when you're young, you just think, oh, I'm going to do this forever. And then the older you are and the longer that you're in it, you just realize, you know, this could be taken from you at any time.
Yeah.
You know, and once it's gone, it's hard to, like, get it back. These jobs are hard to get. And so you just really try to be in the moment and just love what you do for as long as you can have it.
When you analyze yourself now coaching here as opposed to again in Westminster or at Idaho, how else have you changed? I assume that's not the only big stride. I assume there are other things that you look back and go, wow, I handled that so differently then than I would now. Or, you know, do you see anything else in yourself that way?
Yeah, I'm a lot more patient with everything. I think when I was young, for instance, when I was a player, I was a really good offensive player. And the offensive side just made sense. Like, I was just an instinctive player, and I had great skills and athletic ability. And like, I could just go and, you know, get stuff done. Just go do stuff, right? And so then when you become a coach, when I was a young coach, and you're trying to teach offense, and then guys can't figure what you think is a simple concept, I would just lose it. Like, how do you not understand this? Are you kidding me right now? You know, and it just, I think when you're a young coach, you don't realize that everyone learns things differently, you know, and being a great coach means being a great teacher, you know. And so I over time, that was one of my early lessons, is that if one player doesn't get it, okay, that may mean that player's not paying attention, or, you know, maybe you can put in a little bit more time. But if more than one player aren't figuring things out, you need to take a big look in the mirror, because you probably did a bad job coaching it, right? Yeah. And so that's really where, you know, there's things like that where you grow a lot as a coach. And, you know, like, I'll teach a con, like today, if I was to teach a concept out there and I got like four guys on the floor that are just like, I don't know what's going on, instead of just like blowing my whistle, like, what's wrong with you? Get on the line. You know, it's just, I would pause and say, okay, clearly I taught this wrong. Let's restart. Right.
Yeah.
And that goes a long ways, you know, with the players. I think also, when you're young, you're so consumed with results. Yeah, you know, because you want to prove yourself. You want to prove this is, you know, they made a good hire, right?
Yep.
And the older you get, the less that matters. You know, it's like, yeah, of course you want to win, but it's honestly the people that you're with, like, that's all that you're going to remember. You know, it's the same as when you're a player. Like, you want to win. And I remember when I was a player, I wanted to win and I wanted to score points and do this and do that. And then the only things I remember are the times I spent with my teammates and those memories. That's all that mattered to me. That's all that matters to this day. And so, like, those are big growth things, you know. Like, obviously you got to juggle that balance of, you know, hey, we want to try to, you know, reach some goals and set some goals and things like that. But I'm not going to ever lose my mind if we fall short of reaching a goal or whatever, because that's not the most important thing. Every team runs their own race, you know. It's a journey for every team, and I'm just there, I'm along for the ride, you know. It's like, well, how can I help facilitate this? How can I help get us to where you guys want to go? And that's been a lot more enjoyable. But that doesn't mean that I don't, you know, that I don't have concern for our team, or I'm not trying to, like, figure out how we can be our best version. You still want to be your best, but at the same time, you realize that's not the most important.
Hey, back here once again. Roll Diggs, ladies and gentlemen. Paul Podesko, Coach Adam Hyatt on an afternoon, morning, evening, whatever it is for wherever you're at. Coach, you know, we've been talking a lot about past versus present, you know, talking about the things you have learned as we've grown older. Mm-hmm. We don't need to get into that too far. But the one thing I always am very interested in is I think, you know, I can look at most professions and go, yeah, you were meant to do this. You know, if somebody is doing the right thing, you can tell pretty easily. You know, their heart is in it. You can see it in their demeanor. You can see it in the people around them more than anything. When was the first time that, obviously, you probably had a basketball in your hand before you could walk? Talk about when that first time you're like, you know what? Yeah, the idea of being a coach is an appealing one.
So I really started to love the game when I was in fourth grade.
Okay.
That was it. I mean, before that, I was just a knucklehead kid, liked to ride motorbikes and, you know, and I'd play basketball and play sport, play tennis and golf, whatever, you know, when I was young. But then when I was in fourth grade, our family moved from Sandpoint, Idaho to Bonners Ferry, Idaho.
Yeah.
Okay. And they had, like here they have YMCA. Mm-hmm. Down in Utah, it was called Junior Jazz. You know, up there it was Kiwanis basketball. Okay. So the Kiwanis group
Kiwanis
sponsored
Club.
It.
Okay. Yep.
Kiwanis Club. And so I remember that was my first real formal team when I was in fourth grade on this Kiwanis team, right? And whatever it was, it just captured my imagination and it just captured my complete and total interest. And when I was in fourth grade, I knew that that was the most important thing in the world to me was basketball. Nothing else mattered. Right?
Was it one of those where you kind of cut off everything else, whether it be tennis and things like that? Or
yes. Okay. So tennis and golf, that all just became secondary recreational stuff. Like you grow up in a small town, you still got to play football. You still got to play baseball. And I end up cutting off baseball and it ended up everything. My sports tree ended up getting pruned down to just basically one branch and it was basketball. Right. So fast forward then to when I was in high school and I was actually speaking to the Kiwanis Club, the Sunshine Kiwanis Club here in Butte last week. And I was telling them this very same story that when I was in high school, they asked for volunteers to coach Kiwanis, the young, you know, the YMCA ball, the Kiwanis basketball. And I said, I'll do it. Right. And I never really coached, but I love basketball. Mm-hmm. And I knew that this is what I wanted to do when after our first game, we lost the game, and I couldn't sleep that night because I was thinking about fourth grade Kiwanis basketball and how the next game we were going to out-scheme that team, you know, the team, and we were going to figure out a way to win, you know, and all that stuff. And I thought, this, if I care about it this much now as a dumb high school kid, then it's got to be something special. Now, it was always in the back of my mind, okay? Still wasn't sure, you know, because nobody in my household had coached. No one's coached anything really. My dad coached our little league baseball or whatever.
As a good dad does,
right? But you know, no formal coaching. I didn't know anybody that had played college basketball or anything like that. I was blessed to be able to have opportunities to go play. I started to be around these higher level coaches. Started just look at them with great respect and admiration. Be like, man, how cool would that be, you know, to be where they are. Right?
So are you watching other coaches at this time, like bookmarking stuff that you like how they approach the game or you like how they handle situations on the floor? Is that something that you're going, yep, I liked it. Were you taking piecemeal from different coaches at that point already?
Yes. So at that point, like, especially when I got into college, then it was when I would watch basketball games, I didn't watch for entertainment or watch the ball. I'm watching, okay, what are they doing out here? Like, how are they coaching this game? Like, what are the strategies that are being employed out there? And like, I really started to think about it a lot more. Okay. So, but you know, you're still going through the process and figuring things out. And Coach Connor, bless his heart, I talked to him a lot about it. And I was like, I would really like to get in the coaching. And he said, no, you're not. Don't get in the coaching. No. I'm not letting you do that. You're not getting the coaching.
Is this while you were playing for him?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is while I was playing for him. So he said no. And I was like, why would you say no? He's like, it's just so hard. Because his dad was a longtime coach. His dad was the Boise State head coach.
Okay.
And had coached at Idaho State and College of Idaho. And like, his dad was a legendary coach.
Connor's family has seen it all.
Connor's family has seen it all. He's been fired and hired and fired and hired, you know, all this stuff. And so he just saw like how challenging it can be for a family or whatever. But he would also tell me, he's like, you should be a lawyer. That's what you need to do. It's like, be a lawyer. That's where, you know, you could best use your mind or whatever. And so I went to grad school. I helped out like kind of a grad student down at BYU with their team. And I wanted to do it, but I wanted to be sure it was right. Okay. So during this time, I did a lot of different things. Okay. So I was still doing like this little coaching thing, you know, helping as like a grad assistant. Yep. But then, you know, I worked as like a, as a book publisher. I worked for a state government. Okay. I worked for Costco. I taught, you know, in high school, you know, so I did a multiple things to see, and I enjoyed all of those.
Or are you looking at that as going, I have several landing pits to fall into if this coaching thing doesn't work out?
Part of it was just, yes, I wanted to make sure that there were other things that I could probably land, you know, the soft landing or whatever. But more importantly, it was, if you're going to go in the coaching, you got to be all in. And so I wanted to try these other things to see if any of those captured my interest, right? Okay. If they didn't capture my interest in the same way, then I'm going all in, okay? So did all those things. And then I realized, and I told, you know, my wife and I were just barely new married, you know, and newlyweds. And I told her, I was like, this is what we're doing. I was like, are you with me? You know, she's like, all the way, let's do it, right? And so I got really lucky, and that's what started the journey, and we haven't looked back for a second. There wasn't a time that we ever looked and said, oh, gosh, why did we do this? Now, I mean, I'm not going to lie. When we came up to Montana Tech and, you know, and started, you know, recruiting kids here and, like, seeing all these great educational opportunities with engineering and stuff, I kind of thought, boy, that would have been fun to do engineering. maybe if I would have known about that. But I could tell you where my mind, this is probably terrible to say. I don't know if I should admit this publicly, but for the sake of the pod, I'll admit this publicly.
Here you go.
So when I was in junior college, I had 15 or 16 like Division I offers. Okay. So I was a pretty highly recruited prospect. Mm-hmm. And this is pre-cell phone days. Okay. And so I was in my apartment at Ricks College, and the phone's ringing. Like, someone get the phone, yeah. You know, because I never answered the phone because I got tired of talking to coaches, right? Yeah. And so no one is home. Phone kept ringing. So I went and answered the phone, and it was Tommy Connor, okay? And so it was the first time I talked to him, and it was the only non-Division I program that I talked to, okay? And there was just something about him that really started to just draw me in. You know, I was like, this is different than other coaches. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I had a teammate that I thought, okay, well, worst case scenario, I can get my teammate to come with me. Let's go on a visit. I can help him land at the spot. I didn't know anything about Westminster. Nothing. Never even heard of it. Right. And so we went on a visit. And during those 2 days that we were down there on a visit, got to spend a lot of time with Coach Connor. And I just felt in my heart of hearts, it's like, I need to be here. Like, there's something about him that he's going to help me reach the goals that I want to reach. Okay. So I was so consumed with that I ended up delaying it because I got a lot of pressure from these other schools, mm-hmm. you know, got a sign, come here. And I finally said, no, I'm going there. And it was shocking to a lot of people. Like, honestly, it was like, you're going where? And my dad would get these phone calls from these other coaches, like, you can't let him do this. And my dad would just say, this is what his heart is telling him he needs to do. He's going to do it. So, and they never tried to talk me out of it.
Which had to be hard. I mean, like mm-hmm. you say, if there is that carrot being dangled out there, and I think we've all seen or heard about it, and it doesn't matter what sport, the idea of going with what felt right.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. And for multiple reasons, like, you know, I grew up in a small town and, you know, it is a smaller school and,
yep.
and I had a coach that really was invested in me, and I wanted to go where I could play and I could win and I could reach the goals and like put myself on a position to make a career out of it. Right. Somehow out of this beautiful game. So fast forward to that summer. I remember it's June. So I commit, I'm going like, oh, you got to get your application in. Okay. Oh yeah. We got to apply for school. I'm gonna forget about all that stuff. So apply for school. I'm down there working at camp in June. And I remember Coach Connor saying, so what are you going to major in? I hadn't even thought about it. I had no idea. And I was like, what do you have here? And so, because I was just, my mind was just on, I'm going there for my future.
Yeah, right? which has to be, is it over 80%, do you think, as far as college recruits? That has to be the case.
Maybe, probably. I mean, I think a lot of them are thinking that way, you know.
Yeah.
But also, you know, you're relatively confident enough with your academics that you're like, I can choose whatever, you know. And so I went through the catalog and it's like, okay, what could I finish in 2 years? You know, so I was like, found this one. All right, I'm doing this. So went and graduated because I was like, I could do this in 2 years. That was where my mind was at the time. Where I, when I said I was all in, I really was all in. That was where my focus was, almost to the point where I didn't even know what I was going to major in.
Yeah, I'm not sure you should tell people that either, honestly. Well, and I mean, it feels like that has to be the bigger percentage of people that are like, hey, I've got an opportunity. I want to go play ball. You know, I want to keep playing this beautiful game, you know, and just that idea of playing more. How many people have you recruited that the education here is a significant factor of them wanting to come here?
Okay. Let me give this little caveat here.
All right.
I was an academic All-American, okay? So, like, it's not like I didn't care about school.
No,
okay?
I know. Actually, that's a good call. And actually, to even go back farther, you were also the Frontier Conference scoring leader your senior year or junior? Your senior year. What, 21.6?
Yeah, almost 22 a game, yeah.
There you go. So you can back it up.
So a lot of kids, everybody's different. We've had players like Sindhu Diallo, okay? Sindhu recognized the value of getting a degree from Montana Tech. That was important for him.
Okay.
But Sindhu also, and probably more importantly, saw the value of coming and being the chief cornerstone of the program, being the guy that we were going to, the face of the program that we were going to parade.
He's the hood ornament.
Yeah. And so that was important for him. We've had other guys that, you know, the academic piece, getting an engineering degree or getting the business degree here was the reason why they came. Mm-hmm. They love basketball and they're going to be great, but they knew that when their eligibility was exhausted, that they were going to be a professional in something different other than basketball, right? And you got to have a great mix of those guys, because I think that if you have too many of one or the other, then you're probably not going to have the locker room that you want. So we have a good mix of those guys. We got some on our team this year that are super, super high-end students and amazing student athletes. And then we have some amazing athletes that are also good students, you know? And so it's like having that mix is important as well. So, but everybody, the thing is that we hold everyone the same standard. You know, so like we're going to try to maximize their potential no matter what it is. So not everyone can be a 4.0 student, just like not everybody can score 20 a game.
Yep.
You know, it's just everybody has unique talents, different talents. We're just trying to figure out what someone's academic potential is. So someone who might be just working their tail off, tutoring, study sessions, study halls, meeting constantly with coaches so that they can get a 3.0. Man, I feel so great about those guys because, like, they're putting in so much time. Yes, yeah. Because otherwise they'd fall through the cracks and, like, they'd probably just burn out, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's some, like, Michael Ure, those types of guys that, you know, they work really hard, but things come maybe a little bit easier to them academically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if he gets an A-, he's devastated. How can I get this A-? You know, which is rare. He doesn't get very many of those.
No, that's my understanding.
Yeah. So there's a good mix of those guys, but that's part of what makes this profession really fun, is just being able to be in the presence of these unique personalities and these different characters in the locker room and be able to see what their goals are and how you can help them reach those goals, whatever they might be. I love it. The greatest compliment for a coach, at least from my experience, is that years down the road, after, you know, 10, 12, 15 years after you've coached somebody, that you'll get a call just out of the blue, you know, from this player, and they'll say, "Coach, can you help me with a letter of recommendation? You know, I'm changing jobs. I really need this job, you know, whatever." And I'm just like, what an honor.
Yeah.
That after all these years that you still look at me and say, this is one of my top three go-tos, you know, and I love it. And I tell all of our players, like, I will have their back till the very end. You know, whatever I can do, I'm going
to
do it.
You know? I'd be hard pressed to believe that. Yeah. You wouldn't have that thing written before they even hung up the phone, man. It'd just be instantaneous
right away. I don't even sleep on it. I'm like, let's go. Let's go. What's your email? I'll send it to you as soon as I'm done.
And probably the biggest compliment, other than obviously talking about the talent you always have on your roster, how well you coach, how well coached your teams are. When I'm on the road and talking to people that come up to me and want to talk about Tech basketball, One of the real big ones that I get, especially obviously in state, is your ability to recruit in-state kids. You know, the importance of that, and obviously it's multifaceted and multi-tiered as far as the importance of Montana kids, but that's a big, big factor.
It was our top priority when we came up here in 2016. I remember we hired, Derek Selvig was one of our first assistant coaches we had. Sean Ryan, is the golf coach. He was one of our assistant coaches at the time. And remember, we had like an early meeting of the minds, and we just really wanted to establish that piece of the recruiting where, we could get the best pieces in state that were going to help us win. And we wanted to be the face of Montana basketball. That's what we wanted to do. And, we've been really, really fortunate to be able to have a great diversity of players from different classifications and different areas. We have AA kids from the larger urban areas, and we have small, tiny town kids from Class C's and Class B's. And it's just really fun to kind of see these kids and how they blossom and their careers can grow and develop. It's we don't look at ourselves as better than anybody else in the conference because we have Montana kids or not. It's just for us, we feel like it fits the brand of Montana Tech. That's what I determined early on here is like, this is a blue collar school. We bring in kids from, humble backgrounds and origins, and they turn themselves into incredible success stories. And we didn't want to change. We didn't want to deviate from that blueprint. Like, that's what our university is built on. And so we wanted to, emulate it the best that we could. So we get kids from real humble backgrounds and, Fairfield and Fort Benton, and even from like Missoula, Billings, whatever, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And they come in here and they develop and they put in the time, and they're able to do incredible things and reach the pinnacle of what their athletic accomplishments could be. And it brings us great satisfaction to be able to see that.
And you would never know that, I think of a Darius Collins from that, and even Cam from that incredible Hellgate run. Mm-hmm. They were the heart and soul of those teams that won state championships. Yep. It felt like for a decade straight, for goodness sake. And they're out here on the floor with like you say, you're the rest of your guys, and you just would never know that there's any difference between any of them. All that kind of stuff gets pushed aside, and they're ore diggers as they get rolling.
Yeah, they blend well together. I feel like the landscape of Division I has changed quite a bit, and with the transfer portal and kids hopping from place to place, and there being a little bit of a revolving door of roster spots, and retention is really hard, that there's a yearning for a place where players in Montana can go and they can feel like it's home. And that's really what we've tried to do. We try to create that home environment where, like, this is, it might be nerve-wracking to leave little town to come here to school, but when you leave Butte, when you graduate, you won't want to leave. Like, you'll want to come back and you'll want to be here. And so it's really fun to be able to see all of our former players come back and follow us on the road and come here and just are just completely invested, because they do feel like Butte is their home.
Yep.
Montana Tech is their home. And, we just want everyone to have that comfort level. And that's what we're striving to do.
The text messages and other messages I'll get during games, as we're broadcasting games from former players, I just love. They'll come floating in and give me a hard time here and there and go from there. But to kind of follow up and finish on that idea, you want to be kind of the face of Montana basketball. Do you feel like you're there? Have you feel like you've accomplished that, or do you think there's still some movement to
go? I don't think you're ever there.
Yeah.
It's like it's one of those moving targets. You're just always trying to reach it, but it eludes your grasp, every time you reach for it, and you just try to reach higher and move higher. And, we certainly are not ever in a position where we feel like we're entitled to get any certain player at all. It doesn't work that way. We have to show that this is the right fit for a certain player, and otherwise it's just not going to work. So now I don't know. That's a terrible question for a coach, because if a coach ever feels satisfied or feel like they've arrived, then 100%. They should probably retire.
Yeah, completely agree. I want to kind of shift to schedules in the Frontier Conference as we know it. Because, again, you have been around the Frontier. I don't mean to use this terminology and make us both feel old, but I apologize. But you've been around the Frontier Conference for a long time.
Long time.
Back when West Minnie and Lewis Clark State were part of us, and when Dickinson was here for a couple minutes. We've seen a lot of change go through the Frontier Conference through the years. And next year is going to be the biggest change we've experienced in the Frontier Conference in many decades. Talk about the what you see as the good parts of, you know, because right now we're playing the triple round robin. Mm-hmm. We whine and complain about it all the time. It's incredibly hard. The idea of, you always hear it's hard to beat somebody twice, let alone three, four, or even five times, for goodness sake. Talk about what's going to be a benefit, I guess, first when we merge, you know, the North Star schools with the Frontier schools as we know it.
So when I was in junior college, we used to scrimmage Frontier schools, the late 90s. Okay. So I've, and indirectly, and then I played in the early 2000s. So indirectly for like over a quarter of a century, I've been part of the Frontier in one capacity or the other.
Yep.
We kind of dated ourselves for that.
We kind of do. Yeah.
So it's going to be really fun. It's the travel's going to be unique. We're going to play in towns that we've never been in before. Mm-hmm. We're going in arenas and gyms that we've never played in before. I think there's going to be a couple years to adjust to try to figure out, okay, what's the best way to travel to this place? You know, what are the tendencies of these coaches and these other places, you know, because you're bringing in six new pieces that you don't play on a regular basis. Yeah. Right. And so there's going to be there's a lot of excitement there, you know, to that new challenge and these new opportunities. And I think the greatest benefits are, one is there's going to be less non-conference scheduling. Okay. And less that sometimes that there's a benefit to it, but with the trend going around the country right now where conferences are just growing more and more and more, they're accumulating more conference games, and that presents fewer non-conference opportunities. So it becomes harder and harder to be able to get quality games.
Yes.
And to be able to get quality games costs a lot of money, because you got to like spend money to get them to come up, or you got to spend money to go play them wherever they are. Right. Yeah. So we get 22 guaranteed games every year now, just through conference. And then we would schedule six non-conference games. So that's quite the dramatic shift.
Yeah.
Because right now, playing the triple round robin, we only get 15 with the triple round robin.
Yeah.
So we got to go out and get 13 plus a couple exhibitions or whatever. So you're, half of your schedule is non-conference that you're trying to build and figure out what works, you know, every off season or even during the season. So that's benefit number one, is it makes scheduling a little bit easier. Benefit number two is, from my capacity, I'm the Frontier Conference rater. Okay. Or I have a national vote, and I'm part of the areas rating committee here in the West.
The ARC, which we've heard an awful lot about lately.
And I'm part of our Western ARC committee.
Okay.
And so we have a big hand in who gets into the postseason. Right now, currently, the Frontier Conference, we cannibalize each other. Because of this triple round robin, our numbers are small. We only have six. People end up, their metrics end up getting damaged because of the multiple times that we play each other. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it just makes it harder to get multiple teams in. So from a rating standpoint, and an ARC chairperson or ARC committee member moving forward with 12 teams in the conference, there's going to be a little bit more of a separation to where you're going to have tiers now. You're going to have a top tier of three or four teams that are going to be year in, year out, have opportunities to get into the national tournament, middle tier that might be on the bubble, and then your lower tier or whatever. And it's going to make things a little bit easier to sell, you know, because the numbers for our conference, the metrics are going to look a little bit better. So that's a huge advantage for us right there.
Yeah.
I think also we get rid of the triple round robin. It's over. And so now you're just playing the home and away with every team, right? So
I don't mean to cut you off. Are we going to kind of go back to the travel partner days? Where
we are going to do travel partners. Yes. Now there's still some details that we're working out, like what days are the games going to be played on. There might be a couple changes with some travel partners over here in Montana. But yeah, we're going to that format. So you're going to be home for two games. You're going to be on the road for two games. Home for two, on the road for two. You know, right now with our current schedule, like it's kind of there's a lot of variety to it, whereas like a lot of times you have split weeks. Like you'll play one at home, one on the road. you know, or you'll go two on the road and one at home, two more on the road or whatever. So it's going to create a little bit more consistency with the schedule. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think that the, you know, some of the schools are a little nervous about, boy, this is such a big footprint now, because honestly, we're almost mirroring, you know, some of these, we're not as dramatic as the Big Ten right now, where the Big Ten, you got the West Coast to the East Coast, you know, but still we're going to cover Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, and we got a team in Nebraska now. So we got four states. That's just on the basketball and volleyball side.
And they're not small states by any stretch of the imagination.
No, they're large states, yeah. And then you add, and then when you look at the football with all the associate members, you add Idaho, Arizona, and California.
Yeah.
And so it's like, now you got seven states, which I can't imagine that's going to be sustainable long term. That's cannot be.
Yeah, and that's a discussion for another time, but yeah, I completely agree.
But from our standpoint, you know, it's going to be really good because we are absorbing some good programs. I traditionally over there in what's currently the North Star is dissolving. They will all become the Frontier Conference. You have Bellevue University out in Omaha area. They're a traditional, I guess you'd say, power in the North Star. They go to the national tournament quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we're able to bring them in. That's going to help our league. Dickinson State, you know, is a very solid top to bottom athletic department. They have a lot of quality programs. That's a really nice addition.
Well, and they were a great fit when they were here.
They were.
Dickinson has always felt like a frontier school, whether they have been or not.
Yeah. No, they have. I mean, the only reason it didn't work previously is largely because of the Westminster and the LC State dynamic, where they just felt like they were the recipients of the short end of the stick, where they had to go to Westminster, they had to go to Lewiston, but those teams didn't have to go to them.
Yeah.
Right. And they're just like, well, we got to spend all this money to travel, and then we don't get these two home games. And it was kind of a raw deal that they got. Yeah. And so the second that they had a chance to get out of that deal, they did. But they're going to be much happier now because there's stability, you know, and I think that's what both conferences were looking at. You know, it's like we have a solid, unbelievably solid core six here in the Frontier. But we just felt like in order for the long term health and well-being of the Frontier, we had to add some additional members that were also going to be solid, you know, and it was going to contribute to the overall health of the program or of the conference. And so all these schools that we're bringing in are healthy. They're viable. They're going to be great members, great partners to be with. It's going to be hard, the competition. I think it's going to, you know, just much like in when Westminster and LC State joined the Frontier, you know, a couple decades ago, it raised the bar for everybody
dramatically.
Yeah,
it was not a little wave. It was tsunami stuff.
And so you had, like, it was sink or swim for everybody. Yep. If you wanted to compete, you had to invest more. You had to care about it more. You had to put more energy and resources into it, right? Yep. And so what it did is that completely elevated the Frontier to a national profile, where before that it was just a regional thing, you know, where no one outside of Montana really knew a whole lot about the Frontier. But then it became more of a national brand, right? Yeah. And so the same thing is going to happen, I think, with these North Star schools, where their profile is a little bit lower right now. They kind of get lost in those states over there.
Yep.
Being affiliated with the Frontier, it's going to raise the tide for everybody. And sooner or later, they're going to be, you know, they're going to also feel the same way that all the Frontier schools felt when Westminster and LC joined, where it's like, okay, we got to raise the bar, and it's only going to make our conference stronger.
That's exciting. It's exciting to see what is in the future. And obviously, there's still so much work to be done on almost every sport still at this point. But, you know, I think that's kind of the other exciting part about it, is that we could see more sports because the North Star, a lot of those schools have sports that we do not in the Frontier Conference. Most of them, baseball, softball, wrestling is one that is being thrown around an awful lot lately. So it'll be interesting to see what the Frontier landscape looks like in another 5 years.
Yeah, it's true. It certainly is exciting. I mean, right now, what does the Frontier sponsor that has like full-time membership, right? I mean, without the Frontier Conference, without associate members, men's and women's basketball, volleyball, and track and field now, maybe? Yeah. Track, field, cross country? Like, that's about it, right? Our golf's part of, like, a conference that's in Texas, for crying out loud, right? Football, we have all these associate members, right?
Yep.
Our soccer schools, they have to go over to the Cascade, right? Yep. So it's like we have so many just programs that are just out in other conferences that now everybody's going to be under the same umbrella with all these additional members that are coming in. And like you said, the prospect of maybe adding some more members to baseball or softball or soccer or whatever, it's pretty exciting. Exciting times.
Once again, I want to thank Coach Adam Hyatt for joining me just about 4 feet from his office earlier and taking some time out of his day to talk about Ordinger basketball. We are going to talk to him quite a bit here over the next few. On a timely sense, we'll talk as far as conference. We'll talk about national tournament and a whole lot more as we continue. But I just certainly want to thank him for that. And as far as the timeline goes, we're going to check in with head coach Jeff Graham. The idea that Coach Graham and I sitting across the table together with coffee between us, the two most ADHD people you're probably ever going to come across, that could be real interesting. And it could be real long, so you might have to strap yourself in for that one. We're going to talk to Matt Steppen, our athletic director, as far as the Frontier Conference expansion. I think that's very important for people to understand, as the Frontier Conference is going to look very, very different next year. So, again, I'm Paul Panisco. Thanks for joining us for Roll Digs, the official Ordinger Athletic Podcast. Make sure to... you know, tell your peoples and like and share. And I don't even know what I'm supposed to say here, but you go ahead and do those things.